you ready to head down the path to an amazing retirement? We're tackling the topics on the mind of the modern retiree here on Retirement Starts Today Radio. And now, your host, Benjamin Brandt.
Welcome back to Retirement Starts Today Radio. I'm your host, as always, Benjamin Brandt. We've got a fantastic guest in line for you today. We've got George Kinder. He's the father of life planning. And what life planning is, it's the softer side of retirement planning. Believe it or not, he's trained over 3,000 advisors across the world, digging into their clients' financial goals beyond just the numbers and learn really what is the core, what is the softer side of their retirement goals. So listen in on our conversation. We're going to talk about some of the softer side of financial planning, including how our earliest interactions with money can shape our attitudes far into our adulthood. We also discussed the three questions that George has taught over 3,000 advisors to learn about the softer side of their financial goals. We're going to break down each of those three questions. If you are a financial advisor that listens to this show, you should really think about including these questions in your initial meeting with clients. If you are a do-it-yourself investor, which I know many of our listeners are, ask yourself those questions or ask these questions to your spouse and have your spouse ask you back these questions. I think you'll be really excited as to what you might learn about your attitudes about money just from these very three simple questions. So without further ado, let's dive right into our interview with George Kinder. Hey, George Kinder, welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. Nice to be here.
So George, when I told some of my other financial advisor friends that you were going to be on the show, they were all very excited for me because you have quite a name in our industry, which I was excited about. And one of the more senior advisors that I know forwarded me an article, I think it was from like 1994, about some work that you did. And his boss went to a conference a long while ago. And I had learned that you have actually coached over 3,000 advisors on the softer side of financial planning, you know, the life planning. And one of the questions that came up in that conference that really got me excited was the importance of our earliest experiences with money. Now, I've shared on the show in the past, one of my earliest experiences with money is I remember being just tall enough to see over my grandpa's desk in his office, and he would show me nickels and dimes and pennies, and he would say the dimes have ridges and the pennies don't, and then he would tell me a story that my mom used to trick her little brother into trading her pennies for his dimes because she would say, well, the pennies are bigger, thus they must be worth more, so let's trade. And so these are the imprints that I had in my, now I don't know, maybe you could psychoanalyze me and tell me what's wrong with me, but I'm curious, why are our early experiences with money so valuable?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, you just look at that one experience and you wonder, how long did it take? Was it your brother to realize he was being cheated in some way and taken advantage of? And what happened then? And then how did you feel about that when you, at first it seems like just fun and games. And then at some point it's more, you know, you want to treat your brother like your brother. You know, those are interesting times. It brings up all kinds of stuff around money that, I mean, for instance, we think that money is a lot about being clever, for instance. So that game, it's a beautiful game. And I played it when I was a kid and probably teased my young daughters about it when they were young. But what we learn is that money really is not about cleverness so much. I mean, it helps. In fact, we learn that cleverness is not necessarily a virtue. It's not like kindness or generosity or patience or any of those things. And moreover, what we learn is that money is not about the transactions. It is, in a way, Adam Smith was right on, it's about transactions. But really what money is about is our life. I mean, we want our life to be magnificent. And whatever that means for each of us, whether it's deep or exciting or vital or interactive, we want it to be rich in that way. And what I've discovered and what I've trained advisors mostly, and we've certainly covered those emotional experiences of childhood, but we focused now mostly on what does freedom mean to you and how can we get at it? And we engage in really profound conversations about it because money's meant to support that depth, that profundity of our life. We only have one opportunity. And in every place outside of India, perhaps, you have one opportunity for it. And so we want everybody to go for it.
I've often commented to people that I've had money conversations with, there's two outcomes that we could have in retirement. One is running out of money, which is painful, and we don't want to do that. But the second outcome, I think, is potentially even more devastating, and that's living in regret. Do you ever talk to people about living in regret?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the themes of an exercise that I do in some of the talks that I give to large financial advisor organizations is, what is the greatest risk? And in a way, you're identifying it there. At first, we think that the greatest risk around money is a 1929 style collapse, and then it's gone. But we learned as we went into more of a financial planning era, well, there's estate planning and there's charitable giving and all this stuff. And we realized that, well, maybe it's not having my financial plan in place and having budget and all of that. But really, I think it's that third aspect that you're bringing up. And I think the greatest tragedy around money is really not living our life to the fullest. And money is meant to sustain that, to power that, to give us the ability to do it. And when we place more emphasis on money, and this goes to my more recent book on civilization, if we place more emphasis on money than on the virtues, the values, the experiences, the passions that we really care about, we're doing a disservice to ourselves, to our family, and to the community, and to civilization.
So are you saying if we look at our 401k balance, if we log into Vanguard or Fidelity and we see X number of dollars in there, and that's what we focus on, we're missing the forest for the trees, because it's not the money, it's what opportunities that money could unlock within the guidelines of a financial plan or something similar.
Absolutely. And you think about it. I mean, I know that you've got an RIA and everything, and what you want for an investment philosophy. I mean, I hardly ever look at my assets. What I've done is I've structured them in such a way that I can relax. Big wins, big losses. I know what's going to happen. I balanced it. I've got it out there. So I can focus on my life and focus on delivering my kids into the life that they really want to live. I can focus on my relationship. I can focus on my creativity and the kind of innovations that I might make for society. I can focus on our friendships. And how much more valuable is that? So having an advisor you can trust, having a system you can trust, and knowing that the money is there to serve and how it will serve your passions and your needs. Boy, what a gift that is.
That sounds fantastic. And so part of uncovering that gift and writing it down, you've trained, like I mentioned earlier, over 3,000 advisors on every continent except Antarctica, I think you said in the pre-interview. And one of the things that you teach advisors to do when they're working with clients on developing, you know, some of the softer side of their financial plan beyond the numbers, is there's three questions that they should ask to really dig deep and start to peel the onion, to use an old financial advisor cliche. Can we talk about those questions and kind of go through why they're so important?
Yeah, they're great questions. Thank you for asking about them. The first question is, it's easy to ask. You wake up one morning and you've got all the money you need for the rest of your life. Wow, what would you do? And so you write down all the fun things that you would do. And it's just a playful imagination. But for us as consumers, or as clients of an advisor, it is beginning to articulate the things we care about. And that begins to make loosen kind of the wheels and everything so that we can actually make deeper and richer and more accurate decisions around money. So the second question goes deeper. And you go to the doctor and the doctor tells you you have a terrible illness, but the good news is you'll never feel it. You'll feel as healthy as you feel right now for the rest of your life, but you'll only live 5 to 10 years. So the question is, well, what would you do? What would you do with those 5 to 10 years? How would you shift things? How would you live? And you can see already you're thinking, gosh, those people I love, you know, my kids, my family, or it might be, you know, I've always wanted to write the great American novel and I've never dared to do it. And it's time. I've got to do it. Or act in a film or whatever. Or dedicate more to spiritual practice if you're of a spiritual mind. So those kinds of things come up, and life, in a way, you're more on target because that's what has to happen in your life. And the third question does it even more. It goes even deeper. You, same scenario. You go to the doctor, and this time the doctor says, well, I'm sorry, but we didn't diagnose this, but you've had an illness and it's come to term. You've got 24 hours left to live. And the question is not what you would do, but thinking about all the things that you had intended to do and intended to become. What did you miss? Who did you not get to be? What did you not get to do? And maybe this is that regret question that you were asking about earlier. It's not always regrets. Sometimes what happens is people, I mean, you always feel a little somber, but more often than not, you realize, boy, I've been missing it. I forgot to do this and I better get busy. So there's a bolt of vitality and inspiration that comes out of that momentary despair when we realize we haven't done it yet. And one of the reasons we train advisors is we train them to be there in that moment. And if it's tough to get out of the disappointment, we train them in shifting it so that they see the light. And this is how we can move forward. And then there's tremendous excitement that comes up, entrepreneurial excitement that comes out of that.
That's a heck of an afternoon. You win the lottery, you realize you're going to die eventually, and then you're dead at the end of the day.
It is.
So a follow-up to the first question, you've won the lottery and you never have to worry about money again for the rest of your life. Are there both positive and negative outcomes to that question? I'm thinking if I was meeting with someone for the first time and I said, you won the lottery and you never have to worry about money again. And they said, the first thing I'm going to do is quit my job. We think about the positive outcomes, but that's kind of a negative piece of it. Because if you are 10 years from retirement and you realize that you hate your job and that's the first thing you do if you won the lottery, maybe that's something beyond financial that we could start to work on right away. The second question, you don't have much longer left to live. We need to start, you know, crafting a lifestyle that makes all of this worth it. I mean, are we listening for good in the first question? Are we listening for bad? Are we listening for both?
I think what we're listening for is, where would freedom lie for this person? And what's really interesting with that response, that I quit my job, is that clearly they're unhappy. And what a waste for them to spend those next 10 years with that unhappiness. Who knows what's going to happen with their health? 10 years from now, they might not have a moment left to live. So I think that is, it gives us as advisors tremendous insight, and it should give the client insight as well. Is there a way I can leave that job faster? Is there a way that I can cut it to part-time so that I'm actually living with vitality the rest of my life, doing what I really long to do? Those are the questions that we're, I think, meant to address in life. It's not just about retirement. It's about our lives. What's the meaning of it? Let's make them meaningful.
I really love these kind of questions. I love asking questions about, what do you hope to accomplish by retiring? Why do you want to retire? You know, we talk about you need to retire to something rather than retire from something. I mean, these are all the softer side. But I will tell you that we're in North Dakota. Most of our clients are geographically local to us. And for some reason, maybe it's my haircut, I don't know what it is, but we attract a lot of engineers. And to get engineers to talk about some of the things that don't involve return and expense ratios, it's like pulling teeth. What could you tell me to maybe help me make some headways with the analytical types that don't like to talk about the softer side?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I had a lot of engineers as clients too. And at first, I had the same difficulty, the same challenge. And I began to teach, you know, around the world. And in one group that I taught quite extensively over many years, there were people who specialized in engineers. That was all they had. And occasionally they would agree. And then occasionally they would totally disagree with me. And I go, well, what did you do? And they said, well, we gave them your three questions. Or there's another exercise called the Hartscore grid. And it looked like a tic-tac-toe board. So in a way, it fits a design that an engineer can relate to. And then we had conversations coming out of that. So I think it's setting up something that's fun for them to play with, even multiple things, makes it a little bit easier to do. I've got another exercise that looks at, well, what is the ideal day? If you break it down into hours and days and hours and weeks, ideal day, ideal month, ideal year, what does it look like? So those kinds of questions that get them to analyze their life and break it out in new ways often cracks open some conversation that can happen.
Okay. Well, fantastic. Well, if you type George Kinder into Amazon, you'll find that he's written a lot of books on this kind of subject. And in fact, he has a new book that was just released back in March, A Golden Situation and the Map of Mindfulness. And George, what can you tell us about your new book?
Yeah, it's A Golden Civilization and the Map of Mindfulness. I'm more excited about it than anything. The field that I've introduced in training these 3,000 advisors all over the world is called life planning. And so what we've just been discussing as we've been discussing the three questions is life planning ourselves or life planning a client. And what I realized coming out of the terrible recession and banking crisis that we had in 2008, I was devastated by it, not because we were in the wrong investments, but because I'd worked for 30 years already trying to bring greater integrity to the financial services industry. And I took it very personally. I thought that I'd failed in some way. So I decided I'd write a final book that would really cover everything that I hadn't touched on yet. And so it started out about financial services and economics and banking. But then as growing polarization happened in America, I realized, well, gosh, this is related to that in some way, too. What's going on here? And so I looked at democracy and at media and at leadership and all different kinds of things about civilization. And my notion was, let's life plan civilization. What we do when we life plan a client is we get this dream of freedom that they're really excited and passionate about. And then rather than waiting for years for it to develop, they deliver it to themselves with our support in a matter of months, practically. I mean, it's extraordinary how rapidly it happens. So my thought was that if we all got together, we're humans, whether we're on one side of the aisle or the other, we're all human beings. We love kindness. We love collaboration. We love community. We love communication. We love vitality. We love creativity. When you imagine a golden civilization, it's actually the same civilization, whichever side you're on. So I thought, let's design a golden civilization. Let's identify what it is as a vision. And then let's inspire people to work toward it. Because clearly our politicians are locked and can't seem to do anything. Let's do it. Let's do it ourselves. So my book is about that, A Golden Civilization, The Map of Mindfulness. And again, we have conversations now so far on 5 continents. We're only up to about 100 or so conversations, but we're aiming at the thousands and all over the world, and primarily in America and the UK. I spend a lot of time in the UK where they're equally polarized and challenged. So the notion is, let's do it. You know, otherwise, you know, we see these hierarchies of power arising and monopolies arising, and the power has good and it has evil that it can do. I mean, if we don't address how do we have a sustainable civilization and democracy, then we're not going to survive. So it just made sense to me that we do it. And so I'm on a mission about that. My speeches are both about life planning yourself and leading yourself into your dream of freedom, but also let's come together and let's life plan civilization and make a great one. Let's do it now.
That sounds fantastic. You know, our audience is the 50 and up crowd and pre-retirement and people that are focused on their retirement. If you have a neighbor or a brother-in-law or a cousin that you see so often and they're on the opposite side of the political aisle, what advice would you have to them if they want to help build a golden civilization and try to find some bipartisanship towards utopia? I mean, other than yell at somebody on Twitter, what do we do?
Well, yeah, yelling doesn't help much, does it? we have one of our websites is called agoldencivilization.com, and it has a design for conversations where you gather people around your dining room table or your living room, or you can do it in your church or your community center. And there's a structure for having a conversation that's actually amenable, polite, inspiring, exciting, joyous, delightful. And what you do is you design the civilization, and then you go, okay, what are the obstacles? And you might disagree on some of the obstacles, but then what are you willing to do? And what might we do as a group? And there's no hierarchy here, so nobody's forcing you to do something you don't like, but everybody gets excited about what they might do and they form subgroups and that kind of thing. So they're wonderful conversations. And one of the actions that people have taken out of that, which has been inspiring, because these groups are often ongoing groups. They then meet once a month or something like that. And one of the actions that groups have taken on other opposite side of the aisle is, I want to listen better. I want to learn to listen without being reactive to my cousin or my uncle or my brother. And so listening and acts of kindness are some of the things that come out. One of the most inspiring things I've seen coming out of a group in England, that on the outskirts of London. And these are a group of kind of trainers and facilitators and consultants. And they have decided to devise a manual of wisdom to be taught from age 6 to age 96, at different ages, different aspects of wisdom. They've all worked in the corporate culture, and with the notion being that if we were such an entrepreneurial society, how come we don't have wisdom at the top of every hierarchy of power, government, corporate, nonprofit? Why don't we have wisdom up there? And why doesn't that wisdom filter all the way down through the hierarchy? Clearly, there's something that's not quite lined up right in the system that we have that creates this out of the huge knowledge improvements that we make, the science that we grow, that doesn't create wisdom structures out of that. That's one of the things they're onto. And it's just very exciting.
Could you mention that website again for our listeners?
Yes, it's called agoldencivilization.com.
Okay. And George, we sure appreciate the time you've carved out for us today. Where can our listeners learn more about your new book and your other offerings?
Well, it's on Amazon, of course. There's a lifeplanningforyou.com, which is a self-help consumer life planning tool and technique. And the institute that I've run is called the Kinder Institute, and that's kinderinstitute.com.
We have a lot of listeners that are also financial advisors that are brushing up on the latest financial planning and retirement topics. Do you still do training for advisors? And if so, where can they learn more?
Yeah, we do. And that's on the website of kinderinstitute.com. And we do trainings, again, all over the world. And in fact, we're going to do one in the middle of the country. Often it's at one end or the other, or the UK or Hawaii. And we're doing one in St. Louis in a few months. We're doing one here right in Massachusetts in a couple of weeks.
Fantastic. George, thank you so much for coming on the show. I had a blast.
Wonderful, Ben. It was a blast for me too.
All right. Thanks so much, George Kinder. I really appreciate you coming on the show. I learned an awful lot, and I hope our listeners learned a lot as well. If you want to learn more from George, you can check out lifeplanningforyou.com. Click on through to the show notes. We've got all of his books that are available for sale on Amazon. You can purchase them just with one click there. Head on over and check those out. Like I said, he's got a new book that just came out 2 months ago, A Golden Civilization and the Map of Mindfulness. So I think there's a lot of great information in that book that we could all learn from. So thanks again one more time to George Kinder. And until next time, remember that planning your amazing retirement starts today at retirementstartstoday.com.
You should consult a financial advisor familiar with the specific circumstances of your unique financial situation before making any financial decisions. Nothing in this broadcast constitutes a solicitation for the sale or purchase of any securities. Any mentioned rates of return are historical or hypothetical in nature and are not a guarantee of future returns. Benjamin Brandt, CFP, is an investment advisor representative of Capital City Wealth Management, a North Dakota registered investment advisor.